Thank you all for managing to find this room, and I'm gratified to see the interest in the subject here. I first want to acknowledge one of my co-authors is here today. Joyce Fan is in the second row. Please wave. and she is at least as deserving of being up here as any of us. She's the primary epidemiological horsepower behind this project. Eddie Rouser is the data extraction person, which is, if you know, if you've worked with workers' comp data, this is a key person. Barbara Silverstein is my personal sort of inspiration, and she's the one who kept us all our noses to the grindstone. And you know what I'm talking about, Barbara. I have no relationships to disclose. Just as a quick background, just to review for those of you who may not be familiar with U.S. occupational health and safety enforcement policy, really there are sort of four features of U.S. Enforcement policy. It is relatively weak, that's, say, as compared to, say, food safety, when you think about county health departments and the powers they have to affect changes. You will see that. It is compliance-driven as opposed to prevention-oriented. And it is narrowly focused on a set of specific rules which are not fully congruent with the kinds of hazards that workers actually face. We are all familiar with the problems with promulgating new standards. They face numerous and very high hurdles. The examples of this would include the long, sad history of the ergonomics rules, the recently liberated silica rule, and the injury and illness prevention rule, which is still pending. High burden hazards are not covered by specific rules in the United States. And so when inspectors and consultants are in the workplaces, they're talking about specific rules. They're not talking about a lot of hazards that are out there, such as musculoskeletal disorder hazards, chemical safety hazards, which impose significant burden. And to make things even better, federal policy, since the mid-1980s, has been shifting towards increasing voluntary cooperative approaches rather than enforcement activities. I borrowed this from John Mendeloff. This is the total number of workplace inspections, federal and state, since 1980 through 2006, showing that enforcement intensity is low and getting lower. This is just the count of inspection activities. Of course, over this time period, the number of establishments in the economy is tripled. So the inspections per worksite has gone way down since the 70s. And OSHA's maximum penalties are low relative to other regulatory arenas. There's OSHA and MSHA at the bottom, compared to EPA, SEC, FCC, and consumer product safety. So as a background to this, coming at this from the point of view of as an economist, who was sort of, I've been sort of pickled in the approach of rational choice theory as an economist, an economist would be surprised to find any impact at all from occupational safety and health enforcement, for the main reason that the predominant approach taken by economists, this rational choice approach, posits a decision-making model in the employer, which is one of a fully informed employer who understands, all of the regulations, all of the penalties that would be assessed in case of a violation, and knows the probability of detection. And so the rational employer just simply says, how much should I invest in safety? And they just kind of keep increasing the level of safety investment as long as the extra cost of that increase is lower than the benefit that they would obtain from that increase in the form of avoided worker injuries or avoided OSHA penalties. And knowing that those OSHA penalties are very low, the direct costs, that the costs of worker injuries are partly shared across a workers' compensation pool, they may well decide just rationally to not comply with a rule. And furthermore, if they do get inspected, What should change? Nothing. Right? It doesn't change their information set. The underlying probability of detection doesn't change. They already knew what the penalty was going to be. They would just continue to go on. They'd say thank you, and they'd write the check for the fine and continue to not comply. Now, that is contrasted with other approaches, which say, well, we've been in a lot of workplaces, and we never see this kind of management. Management really is, especially with smaller companies, management is overloaded, cognitively overloaded. They're all the time putting out fires, trying to stay alive, in competition with other businesses. And injuries are relatively rare events. We get maybe two to three time loss injuries per 100 FTEs. And the average size firm in an economy is somewhere around 8 to 10 employees. So they're only going to see an injury about once every 15 years. So in that kind of a world, they're not always thinking or collecting information about, what's the risk of a worker injury. And so in that kind of a setting, the ability of an event such as an inspection to shock the management, or a serious injury, a fatality or a very serious injury, to shock management and get them to actually pay attention to safety and invest in it, could be quite high, and we may see quite a bit of an effect from an event like an inspection. I know I'm taking too much time on the background here, but I find it interesting. There's a well-studied link between inspections in the literature, between inspections and compliance. A lot of the literature has looked at, what happens following an inspection, and they do see a substantial change in terms of compliance with standards. What's less well-studied is the link between compliance with standards and prevention of injuries. There's actually been some studies of this. They've today shown pretty mixed evidence of an effect on injuries. Robert Smith and Kit Viscusi in the 70s to mid-80s, definitely coming from a more standard neoclassical economics approach, looked at OSHA logs and looked at industry-level studies and didn't really find much evidence of any effect. Wayne Gray and John Schultz and John Mendeloff more recently actually looked at plant level studies, OSHA logs, and found a pretty substantial effect as long as there was a citation issued, roughly a 20% reduction in the OSHA 300 recorded injuries. But mainly the studies have relied on industry level employer reported data taken from OSHA logs. And these were limited to looking at large manufacturing industries, and there was no equivalent focus on consultation activities, receiving so much more emphasis recently. What we wanted to do was to look at the following questions. First, what impact do enforcement inspections and consultation visits have on workers' compensation time loss claims rates and costs? Trying to get around at least some of the employer filtering there. Do citations increase the effect of inspections? Does the impact of compliance activity differ between fixed site, one location industries versus, say, construction, where the work site moves around, or transportation, where the possibilities for management oversight may be weaker? Is there evidence of effectiveness at the smaller firms? The earlier previous research has really been focused on businesses with 200 or more employees. We want to look at smaller firms where there is less management specialization. Perhaps there's no single person responsible for occupational and environmental safety on the site. And do we, in those cases, also see any effect? And does the impact of compliance activity differ by the type of injury? Not all injury types are related to hazards covered by specific rules. Does having specific rules matter? I'm going to jump through here. We in Sharp there, it does show up, that's good. We are housed in the same agency as the Washington State OSHA plan, which I'll refer to as DOSH, and also the workers' comp issuer for all but the very largest employers in the state. We cover roughly 70% of all the workers in Washington State. And one unique feature of our workers' comp system, which makes this possible, is that we rate our insurance by exposure hour rather than by payroll. We have hours, so therefore we have FTEs, therefore we can make claims rates, and we can study that much more easily. Skipping through, we want through the criteria for inclusion is we wanted to look at a constant set of firms over each four-year study period. We didn't want firms get inspected and then drop out and not be around to be measured to see the percentage change in claims rates. And we also wanted to have include 2 years prior to the year of the DOSH activity in order to get a measure of what this company's sort of historically average claims rate was. You know, claims rates bounce up and down a lot. They're a very poor indicator in any 1 year of kind of the typical experience of a company. And so by including some history of claims rate in the model, we were hoping to tie down a little bit this issue of business quality or experience and avoid some of the issues of regression to the mean where, you know, just for some unlucky companies, they have a high claims rate in the year of the visit, and that would have fallen anyway, even if there hadn't been a DOSH visit. We focus only on the state fund because we get a full data set for all the things we need from them. Single business location companies because we needed to make sure that where we measured claims rate was the same place where the DOSH activity, the enforcement or the consultation visit happened. We thought the effect would get attenuated if we were to pull in all of the locations of a multi-location business and try to find the effect looking at that. We needed to have we needed to get rid of some of the noise. Unfortunately, we had to limit the companies we could study at 10 FTEs per year. And there needed to be a kind of clean slate. So they had to have no prior activity from DOSH for the previous 2 years. We pulled in 10 DOSH activity years and pooled them all together. As an example, if the DOSH visit occurred in 2005, we'd have a two-year pre-study period, a baseline in 2005, and a measurement in 2006. So we did this for those 10 separate years and then pooled everything together. And estimated a multivariate modeling the percentage change in claims rates on DOSH activity status, whether it was an inspection, a consultation, or none. And, of course, the vast majority are none. Size, broken up into three categories, 10 to 24, the mid-range, 25 to 49, and 50 and up. And finally, fixed versus non-fixed, because we think construction is going to look different than, say, manufacturing or healthcare. And we also included in the model, as I said, the pre-study period, the claims rate, the average claims rate before the DOSH activity year. I'm going to jump through all this. This just gives you a sense of, you know, we start with almost 4 million accounts over a 10-year period that are in the workers' comp system. We match merge them. We impose a requirement for survival over a four-year period to get in, and that knocks out three-quarters of the accounts. That's how much churn there is. Tiny businesses coming in and out all the time. We can't have that. So we get rid of them, single business location, that takes some out. And also this filter of less than 10 FTEs, we can't look at them. That knocks a very large number of accounts out. And we're left with also accounts with no pre-study period DOSH activity. Left us with 86,000 workers' comp accounts to examine, at which there were nearly 4,000 enforcement inspections and a little over 1,000 consultations. And here's what we find. This is the change in all time loss. Sorry about the word compensable there. That means time loss. Changes in all time loss claims rate, no DOSH, which is blue, enforcement is red, and consultation is green, and the little stars indicate statistical significance. So as you can see, there's a roughly 4% greater deflection downward in the claims rate in the year following the DOSH enforcement visit, and a somewhat greater deflection in amongst businesses that receive consultation. So that's a very small number, and it's subject to a lot of bouncing around. One thing that's interesting about this result is, you know, it's there. It's not a gigantic difference. It's about a 4% difference. It's not nothing. But when we exclude the WMSDs, when we take out the musculoskeletal disorder claims, which are roughly a third of our claims, and for which there are no specific rules, and so we know that inspectors are not talking about musculoskeletal disorders when they're on the visits. They're talking about things for which there are rules. When we take them out, we get a very different looking picture. In fixed site industries, it actually strengthens the effect. There's a roughly 7 to 8% greater decline in non-MSD time loss claims in the fixed site industry. It weakens it in the non-fixed site, the construction industry predominantly. For consultations in non-fixed industry, they stay roughly the same amount of change in claims rates, but in fixed site, we get a very large drop in claims rates at places that had consultation. Something we really were kind of surprised to see. This is just looking at what we took out of the study. These are the MSDs, and you can see in the year following the visit, there's really no pattern. The musculoskeletal disorder claims really don't change. There are so many of them, though, that they effectively act as a kind of ballast in the study, masking the effect on time loss claims rates of the kinds of injuries that are actually covered by OSHA rules. Okay, what about citations? Well, when we look at visits with citations, and now we're just looking at enforcement visits only, this really cleans everything up. We find that the blue is the no-DOSH reference group. The green here now are DOSH visits, enforcement visits, with no citations resulting. We see it's not statistically significant, but there seems to be a pretty good drop there. But look at places with citations. Three times as much drop when there's a citation. And remind you, this is a citation of an average amount of about $400. We're not talking tens of thousands of dollars here. This is like $400 is the average penalty assessed. That's all it took to get this kind of a result. I don't have time to go over that. We get similar results when we looked at claims costs. I'm going to skip over this. I'm sorry about all of this little sort of PowerPoint silliness. But the story there with the cost is that essentially just looking at the effect on compensable claims, the DOSH program pays for itself just in the savings of costs alone, of claims costs alone, pays for itself. Okay? All right. Quickly through my conclusions. We find, rather surprisingly, for an economist anyway, a large decline in workers' comp claims rates and costs in the 1 year following the visit. That having hazard-specific rules matters. We can see that difference between how non-MSDs responded versus the MSD rules. As a little follow-on to this, when we looked at the second year following the DOSH activity visit, I didn't have a table for a chart for this, but when we looked at what happened to MSDs starting 2 years after the visit, they dropped. And so there was a kind of inertia effect. MSDs did respond, but because of the unique nature of MSDs, the fact that workers are already halfway to having an injury, even if you were to remove all of the hazards in the workplace, you're going to get some claims just because of inertia anyway, whereas for, say, a machine guarding case, you put a guard on a machine, you stop the hazard right away. There seems to be evidence here for a broad kind of a broad front change in management attention to safety following the event of the inspection. We found effects both occurred in fixed and non-fixed industries with some differences in how they responded to consultation versus inspections. We found that citations have a surprisingly powerful effect on time loss injuries. And lastly, and not leastly, there was no decrease in business survival amongst the cohort that received the enforcement visit. So it's not true that regulations impose, that drive businesses out of the economy. That doesn't happen at all. In fact, there's a slight protective effect. We have limitations like old studies. I mentioned before the business location. We can only look at places with one business location. We're trying to expand that. We're only looking at specific deterrence, not general. And where I want to go in the future with this is to look at programmed inspections versus complaint-driven. We hope, at least if we're doing things right, that the programmed inspections really are going to places where there are going to be serious violations, serious hazards, and we're going to have an impact, a bigger impact there than we will at complaint-driven places. We are not happy with the way we treat regression to the mean, so we want to do a little bit of randomization by looking at target lists and pulling out companies that receive a visit and comparing them to ones on that list that didn't get a visit. But that's the only difference between the two. And finally, we want to look at the correlation, really. If we picked out a bunch of companies with high claims rates relative to their industry benchmarks and we sent inspectors there, will we be more likely to find serious violations there? There needs to be better evidence connecting the finding of serious violations of compliance to standards and injuries. That piece of that puzzle really is still not there. All right. I sort of have a little bit of time, maybe. Thank you very much.
We're going to have to hold the questions to the end now because of the delay that we had and all that. So keep your questions to the end, please. Next, please.
And Dora can take off.
Next one will be Kevin Riley. I would like to ask Craig to come here to present.
We don't have that, right? No, we don't.
Hi, everybody. So Eduardo said the science awards are coming together. They are, but we misplaced the paper with Kevin's bio. So I'm going to wing this, and I'm not going to be able to tell you where he got his degree. But Kevin is a sociologist. And not only that, not only a sociologist who's applying his work to occupational health and safety, but he's also seeing that he needs to work in interdisciplinary teams because what he's interested in is understanding work in the new economy and what's happening to the change in work. And so the paper that he's going to be talking about is a paper that talks about a way of finding out how to help workers who have minimal protection and are not going to be able to get protected just by the government without a larger community saying the government has to do that. And we thought it was really interesting work that's going to set a direction for all of us. So, Kevin Riley.